Then he felt an electric tickle of excitement lift the hair on his arms as he read the address stenciled on the side of the nearest chest. Lucky Dragon Investments, 1555 Chongqing's Road, Taipei, Taiwan. Son of a gun, Daniel grinned happily. The Chinese connection, Lucky Dragon. Lucky for some. He crossed to the forklift truck and reached across to the controls. He clicked on the master switch and operated the controls. The electric motor purred and the chest rose silently. At head height, Daniel stopped it. He slipped beneath the suspended case. He did not want to leave any trace of his visit by interfering with the lid or sides of the case. Working between the forked arms of the trunk, he thrust upwards into the bottom of the T-chest with a screwdriver. The plywood crackled as he punched out a circular opening just large enough to admit his hand. He found that the interior of the case was lined with a heavy-duty yellow plastic sheet that resisted his efforts to tear through. He paused to find the clasp knife in his bag and then slit out a flap of the sheeting. There was the familiar smell of dried tea leaves, and he began to dig into the compressed black vegetable mass, spilling the tea out onto the concrete floor. Soon he had dug into the full length of the screwdriver without encountering any alien object hidden in the case. He felt the first prickle of doubt. There were hundreds of tea chests piled on the ramp. Any of them could contain the tusks, or none of them. He widened the hole with a few more blows of the screwdriver. Then he drove the steel point up into the mass of tea with all the strength of his doubt and frustration. It hit something solid, with a force that jarred his wrist, and he almost shouted aloud with triumph. He ripped at the edges of the hole until he could get both hands into the chest, and he dug out lumps of tea that fell onto the ramp around his feet. Now, at last, he could touch the hard object buried in the tea. It was round and smooth. Crouching under the chest, he twisted his neck to look up into the aperture, slitting his eyes against the soft rain of dried tea leaves that trickled from the hole. In the beam of the torch, he made out the soft, creamy alabaster gleam. With the point of the screwdriver, he attacked the exposed surface of the object, stabbing and prizing it, until at last a splinter lifted and he pulled it loose. It was the size of his thumb. "No more doubts," he whispered as he examined the sample and picked out the distinctive chicken wire pattern of the ivory grain. "Now I've got you, you murdering bastards." Quickly, he stuffed the torn flap of plastic back into the hole to prevent any more tea spilling out onto the ramp. Then he swept up the fallen leaves and scooped them into his pockets. It wasn't a very effectual job of tidying up, but he hoped that the loaders would be careless enough not to notice anything amiss when they started work again in the morning. He went to the controls of the forklift and lowered the tea chest to its original place on the ramp. He flashed the beam of the torch around to make certain he had left no other evidence of his visit. And this time, he saw it clearly. A great dark shape crouched at the edge of the ramp, watching him with eyes that glowed like opals, even in the muted beam of the torch. As the light struck it, the creature seemed to dissolve like a puff of smoke, almost supernatural in its uncanny stealth. Daniel recoiled instinctively against the side of the forklift, trying to probe the darkness with the torch. Then suddenly there was a sound that ripped across his nerve ends like an emery wheel. It echoed through the dark cavern of the warehouse and rang against the high roof. It was a hacking cadence, like a wood saw cutting metal, and it set his teeth on edge. He knew what it was instantly, but he found it difficult to believe what he was hearing. "Leopard," he breathed, and with a chill in his guts, he realized his danger. All the advantage was with the beast. The night was its natural environment. Darkness made it bold. Darkness made it aggressive. He pulled the red filter off the lens of the torch, and now the bright white shaft of light sprang out across the warehouse. He swept it back and around, and he glimpsed the cat again. It had moved in behind him, circling in. That was the most hostile manoeuvre. The predator circles its prey before rushing in for the kill. As the light hit it, the leopard flashed away. With one lithe bound, it disappeared behind the wall of tea chests, and its fierce chorus of hatred echoed through the darkness once again. "It's hunting me." Whilst he was warden of Chiwewe, one of his rangers had been mauled by a leopard, and Daniel had been first on the scene to rescue him. Now he recalled vividly the terrible injuries the beast had inflicted. The other dangerous cat of Africa, the lion, does not have the instinctive knowledge of how best to attack the upright two-legged figure of a man. He'll charge in and knock a victim down, and then will bite and claw indiscriminately at whatever part of the man's body he can reach, often gnawing and crunching a single limb until the victim is rescued. The leopard, on the other hand, understands the human anatomy. Baboons form a large part of the leopard's prey, and it knows how to go directly for the head and the vulnerable guts of the primate. Its usual attack is to leap onto its victim and hook into his shoulders with the front claws, while its back legs kick like those of a domestic cat playing with a ball of wool. The long talons, unsheathed, will disembowel a man with half a dozen swift kicks, stripping his guts out. At the same time, the leopard sinks his teeth into the face or throat, and with one front claw reaches over to hook the back of its victim's scalp and tear it off the skull. Often the dome of the skull comes away with the scalp, like the top sheared off a soft-boiled egg, leaving the brain exposed. All this flashed through Daniel's mind as the leopard circled him, its wild, savage call echoing through the open bays of the warehouse. Still crouched beside the forklift, Daniel zipped his leather jacket tightly up under the chin to protect his throat and slid the nylon bag around from the small of his back to cover his stomach. Then he shifted the screwdriver to his right hand and with his left hand swung the torch to cover the leopard's menacing circles. "My God, he's a huge brute," Daniel realized, as he saw the true size of the cat. In the torchlight it was panther black. Bush lore has it that the dark-coloured cats are the most ferocious of the breed. It was impossible to hold the leopard in the beam of light. It was as elusive as a shadow. Daniel knew he would never make it back to where he had broken into the warehouse. It was too far to go with his back unprotected. The cat would be on him before he had covered half the distance. He flicked the torch beam away for a second, seeking another avenue of escape. The fish sacks. He saw the pyramid piled against the near wall, reaching as high as the windows, 30 feet above the warehouse floor. "If I can just reach the skylight," he whispered. There was a long drop down the outside wall, but he had the nylon rope to lower himself at least part of the way. "Move," he told himself. "You're running out of time. It's going to rush you any moment now." He screwed up his nerve to leave the haven of the forklift. The machine covering his back was a solid comfort, while in the open he was vulnerable and puny against the speed and strength of the leopard. The moment he left the shelter of the forklift, the leopard soared again, its savage cry more vicious and eager. "Get out of it!" Daniel yelled at it, hoping to disconcert it with the sound of a human voice. The cat ducked sideways and disappeared behind a pile of packing cases. And Daniel made his mistake. It was a stupid, unforgivable mistake. He, of all people, knew that you must never run from a wild beast. In particular, you must never turn your back on one of the cats. Their instinct is to pursue. If you run, they must charge, just as a domestic cat cannot resist the flight of the mouse. Daniel thought that he might just be able to reach the pyramid of fish sacks. He turned and ran, and the leopard exploded in a silent rush out of the darkness behind him. He never heard it come. It landed with all its weight and the full momentum of its charge in the middle of his back, between his shoulder blades. Daniel was hurled forward. He felt its claws bite in and hold, and for a moment he thought they were hooked into his own flesh. Instead of bearing him down to the concrete floor, the leopard slammed him into the pile of sacks. They cushioned the impact, but still it drove half the air from Daniel's lungs, and he felt as though his ribs had collapsed. The leopard was still mounted high on his shoulders, but as Daniel staggered under its weight, he realized that its claws were hooked into the leather of his jacket and the thick woolen sweater beneath it. Somehow Daniel managed to keep on his feet, supporting himself against the sloping wall of sacks. He could feel the cat on his back gather itself, bringing up its back legs, coiling its body like a spring, ready to lash downwards across his buttocks and the back of his thighs. It would open his flesh to the bone, slicing through blood vessels and arteries, a crippling injury from which he would probably bleed to death within minutes. Daniel pushed off from the sacks with both arms, flipping backwards, rolling his body into a ball with his knees up under his chin. The leopard's claws tugged at the nylon belt of the bag and then kicked on downwards, but Daniel had drawn his legs up and clear. The cat's back paws, with the curved claws outspread, struck at air, missing his flesh. Now man and beast, with their combined weight, crashed to the concrete floor. Daniel was a big man, and the leopard was underneath him. A single hissing snarl was forced from its lungs by the impact, and Daniel felt its claws release their hold in the leather of his jacket. He twisted violently and reached over his shoulder with one hand, the screwdriver still clutched in the other. As he came to his knees, he seized a thick fold of skin at the scruff of the leopard's neck, and with the strength of his terror, tore the creature from his back and hurled it against the pile of packing cases. It rebounded at him like a rubber ball. The torch had been knocked from his grip by the leopard's first charge. It rolled across the concrete floor until it came up against one of the packing cases. Its beam was angled upwards now and reflected from the pale plywood case. The reflection gave Daniel just enough light to anticipate the leopard's charge. Its jaws were open to their full gape, and its extended front paws reached for his shoulders. As it smashed into him, chest to chest, its back legs cocked up in the instinctive disemboweling movement, and its head shot forward to sink its fangs into his face and throat. This was the classic leopard attack, and Daniel countered with the screwdriver held sideways between both his hands, thrusting it like a curb bit into the leopard's open mouth. One of the beast's front fangs broke off cleanly at the gum as it struck steel, and then Daniel was on his back holding the leopard off his face with a screwdriver. It snarled again, and a hot mist of spittle blew into his face. The stink of carrion and death filled his nostrils. He felt one forepaw stretch out over his shoulder, reaching out to the back of his scalp to rip it off his skull. At the same time, the back legs jackknifed up, claws fully extended to tear out the front of his belly. However, the back of Daniel's head was pressed up hard against one of the fish sacks, and the leopard hooked its claws not into the thin flesh of his scalp, but into the coarse jute of the sack only an inch from his ear. Then the cat slashed down with both back legs together. But instead of unzipping his belly, the claws bit into the tough nylon belt of the bag at his stomach. For a moment, the animal's attack was stalled. It ripped at the jute sack, seeming not to realize its error, and the back legs kicked downward spasmodically, tearing the nylon with a sharp rending sound. As it struggled, the leopard pulled back its head, trying to avoid the steel shaft that Daniel was still forcing deeply between its open jaws. Instantly, Daniel whipped the screwdriver back, releasing his grip on the sharpened end, and then drove it forward again, aiming the point at one of the leopard's eyes. His aim was wild. The point of the screwdriver shot into the cat's flaring nostril, but instead of finding the nasal channel into the brain, it deflected slightly, penetrated the gristle of the nose, and ran along the outside of the cheekbone below the dappled skin. The point emerged from beneath the leopard's ear, and the cat screamed with the shock and agony. For a moment, it relaxed its attack. Daniel rolled over and threw the leopard off him. It seemed a miracle that up to now the leopard had not drawn blood, but as Daniel threw it backwards, the cat held on instinctively with one paw. The claws raked down Daniel's arm, slicing through the leather and wool and reaching the muscle of his forearm. It felt like a sword cut, and the pain goaded Daniel to throw in his last desperate reserve of strength. He kicked out with both feet together, and his heels crashed into the feline body just as it gathered itself for the next charge. The kick drove it backwards in a snarling, snapping ball of dark fur that gleamed and rippled in the torchlight. There was a space between the fish sacks at Daniel's back. It was just wide enough to admit his body. He flung himself backwards into the narrow cave. Now his back and flanks were protected, and the leopard could only attack from directly in front. It thrust its head, growling and gaping, into the narrow space, trying to reach him. Daniel stabbed for its eyes with a screwdriver. Again he missed, but the steel point lacerated the leopard's curling pink tongue, and it leapt backwards, hissing and spitting with pain. Go on, get out of it! He howled, more to bolster his own courage than with any hope of driving off the infuriated beast. He drew his legs up under him and worked his way as far as he could into the narrow gap between the fish sacks. The leopard paced back and forth across the entrance, blotting out the feeble torchlight with each pass. Once it stopped and sat on its haunches, wiping its wounded nose with one paw like a domestic cat, and then licking its own blood from the fur. Then it bounded forward, blocking the entrance to the narrow cave, and stretched in one forepaw to try and reach Daniel again. He stabbed at the groping limb and felt it hit and penetrate. The leopard spat explosively and pulled back. It began to patrol the entrance to his cave, pausing every few minutes to lower its head and let out one of those terrible sawing roars. Daniel felt the blood sliming down his forearm under the sleeve and dripping from his fingers. He held the screwdriver between his knees, ready to fend off the next attack, and then, one-handed, bound his handkerchief around the torn arm to stem the bleeding. He pulled the knot tight with his teeth. The wound seemed superficial. The leather sleeve had saved him from serious injury, but the arm was already beginning to throb. Daniel knew how truly dangerous even the slightest scratch from a carnivore's teeth or claws could be, if untreated. And that was only one of his worries. The leopard had him trapped, and soon it would be morning. It was a wonder that the roars of the animal had not yet attracted attention. He could expect a guard to arrive at any moment. As he thought it, the warehouse was suddenly flooded with light. It was so brilliant that the leopard recoiled onto its haunches and blinked in confusion. Daniel heard the faint rumble as the main doors rolled open, driven by their electric motor. It was followed immediately by the sound of a motor car coming in through the opening. The leopard snarled and slunk back towards the rear of the warehouse, carrying its head low and looking back over its shoulder. Then somebody shouted, "Hey, Nandi, back to your cage, back, back!" Daniel recognized Chetty Singh's voice. The leopard broke into a crouching run and disappeared from Daniel's sight. Chetty Singh spoke again. "Lock the leopard in the cage quickly." And there was the metallic clang of a cage door being slammed. "Can you see the white man? Be careful, he may still be alive." Daniel shrank back as far as he could into the narrow opening between the sacks. He had no real hope of avoiding detection, and the screwdriver was not much of a weapon. "There is a torch lying over there, still burning. And over there, by the fish sacks, that looks like blood." Cautious footsteps approached. "Nandi has done her work. Give me the torch." The voices were closer. Suddenly, a pair of legs came into Daniel's view, and then the man stooped and flashed the torch into the dark crack where Daniel squatted. "My goodness," the same voice said in English. "Here is the fellow is, and he's still in excellent fettle. How do you do, Dr. Armstrong? I am delighted to make your formal acquaintance at last." Daniel glared silently into the dazzling torch beam, and Chetty Singh went on in a jocular tone. "You won't be needing that weapon. Never mind. Please be good enough to hand it over." Daniel made no move to obey, and Chetty Singh chuckled. "This is a shotgun of fine English construction, dear sir, made by Mr. Purdy, no less. It is loaded with bullshot cartridges. The Malawi police are very understanding on the little matter of defending self. I beg you most humbly to entertain my request for cooperation." With resignation, Daniel tossed the screwdriver at his feet, and Chetty Singh kicked it away. "You may now emerge from your kennel, Doctor." Daniel crawled out, and holding his injured arm to his chest, rose to his feet. Chetty Singh pointed the shotgun at his belly and spoke to the uniformed guard in Angoni. "Chawi, check the cases. See if the Malungu has opened any of them." Daniel recognized the black guard from the supermarket. He was a big, dangerous-looking brute. "I prefer the leopard for a sparring partner," Daniel thought wryly as he watched the Angoni stride away down the ramp towards the forklift. Before he reached the machine, Chawe exclaimed and went down on one knee to scoop up a handful of spilled tea that Daniel had overlooked. Quickly he followed the trail of tea to the broached case on the forklift. "Lift the case, Chawe," Chetty Singh ordered, and Chawe climbed behind the controls of the forklift and raised the case high. A trickle of black tea leaves dribbled from under it. Chawe jumped down and thrust his arm into the hole that Daniel had gouged out of the plywood. "You are a jolly clever fellow," Chetty Singh shook his head at Daniel in mock admiration. "Just like Sherlock Holmes." "No less. But sometimes it is not wise to be too clever, my dear sir." Looking into the Sikh's eyes, Daniel discounted the man's stilted, clownish speech. Those eyes were deadly. This was no clown. "Chawe, where did the white man leave his truck?" he asked, without moving the aim of the shotgun from the pit of Daniel's belly.
"He came without lights, but I heard the truck on the north side. I think he parked in the open land there."
They were speaking in Angoni, believing that Daniel could not understand it, but his knowledge of Zulu and Indibele allowed him to make some sense of it.
"Go fetch the truck," Chetty Singh ordered.